Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps, the OG 90 Day Fiancé podcast, and place where I, Jody, your best friend and inner voice, break down all the shows we love and love to hate. From TLC to MTV, Lifetime to Bravo, even WeTV and Netflix, let's break down all the cringeworthy moments together. Be sure to check out bonus episodes, extra content, ad-free episodes, and exclusive perks at patreon.com/realitybpod and chat with me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at realitybpod. And now, let's dive right in. Well, here we are again, gathered together to embark on a journey. A journey of highs and lows, hills and valleys, across the continent and across the globe. Now, some of these journeys are contained within the four walls of a prison cell, while others are contained within the four walls of delusion, narcissism, and or love. Now, today, god damn it, my most favorite lineup ever, the primetime lineup, 90 Day Fiancé and Love After Lockup, my most favorite shows to recap. Just real people doing really stupid shit. I'm also on a high today because I experienced, well, I guess you can call it a tragedy, followed by what I only can describe it as a holiday miracle. Now, here's what happened. On a cleaning rampage that, you know, only moms can appreciate, only moms would know, I was helping my 8-year-old son to organize his room, which really means I'm cleaning up all the shit and he finds 3 Legos that must be played with immediately. So I go to pick up a big blue and green, I'm talking bright blue, oh yeah, you know where this is going, bright green lava lamp. There's like yellow lava in it. I'm going to move it and this lava lamp. Now, when I tell you it's a lava lamp, I'm not talking the Five Below, the dollar store kind. This is a legit lava brand copyright lamp that one of my improv buddies gave me. He actually worked for like the real lava lamp people. Anyway, because I am so graceful, my foot happened to find the most slippery surface that was on the floor, which happened to be my 9-year-old Color Me Mine painting. Yeah, did you know that those paints dry into a very smooth, slick, shiny surface? Well, they do. So this old girl here damn near did the splits. The lava lamp came crashing down, hit the inside part of my ankle bone, which apparently has the perfect shape to pierce solid glass, broke the damn thing over my own ankle. It shatters, slices up my foot. I'm bleeding, but I don't give a shit because bright blue lava lamp fluid is spilling all over our 1-year-old white carpet. Now, when I tell you I screamed like my body had caught on fire, Dave came running upstairs. I'm basically now in the position like the Statue of Liberty, but in front splits. I got my hand above my head, holding the remaining shards of lava lamp glass and fluid. There's maybe, 3 tablespoons left in it. So here's where the miracle took place. Now, in emergencies and children's illnesses, you might think I'd freak out, but somehow I turn into an ER doctor. I keep my cool. I become very calm under pressure. I am the calming force. So I quickly gathered, and by gathered, I mean I screamed at everyone else in the house to go get me fucking towels right now. I actually didn't say fuck because I was in my zone, but I did scream for supplies. So I got paper towels, and here is the secret ingredient. 91% rubbing alcohol. Not just plain old rubbing alcohol, it has to be 91%, the strongest shit that you can get off the shelf at, well, not Walgreens, don't shop there anymore, look at Twitter, but CVS, your grocery store, whatever, 91%. I just doused the shit of this rubbing alcohol all over. Now I'm talking, and this was probably like a 2-square-foot area. I mean, this thing spilled everywhere. Soaked it, blot it, soak it, blot it. That's a miracle, my friends. It is all gone. You would never know that that lava lamp was even in the room. That truly is what the holidays are all about. Your mom freaking the fuck out over a little mess in your room, only to break something, blame it on you, because you better believe I looked at my son and I told him that would not have happened if he didn't have crap all over his floor. There is my sermon for today, my homily. Amen. And now, 90 Day Fiancé. Another real miracle, another gift from the heavens above. So let's start out with Ashley and Jay. Now there's 15 days to wed. We're 2 weeks out from this wedding, and we see Ashley and Jay are installing security cameras in their home because of all those threats that were made on their wedding website. I'm guessing they didn't use Zola.com. But Ashley says that a bunch of their family and friends have already started backing out. They don't want to be at their wedding or wedding reception if something dangerous goes down. That sucks. No one should have to feel that way, feeling threatened in their own country, in their own home. It's just shit. So that's messed up. I feel badly for them. And now it's gotten to the point where Ashley now has to tell her bridesmaids. Now we have to remember that these bridesmaids have now had to buy at least two or three other dresses for other weddings that Ashley has canceled. And now she's canceling this wedding. Now, I love my friends. I would do anything for them, but I would be calculating the number of dollars that I had spent on Ashley's weddings altogether if I were her friends. But how can you be mad at Ashley when she walks over to this little winery? She's killing it in the scene. She looks absolutely adorable. She just is pretty and cute and understated. She has this little bandana tie thing in her hair. I'd love to be able to pull that off, but I would look like a grown-up version of Honey Boo Boo or something, but I couldn't pull it off. Now, Jay is sucking down some wine slushy in a sippy cup because he has to pretend he doesn't drink, or he can't drink because he's not even old enough to have a bus pass and he hasn't turned 21. He can't drink. The show doesn't want to have a liability. Now, it probably was a good idea to meet over wine, even though Jay couldn't partake because Ashley's friends were drunk or maybe buzzed, so they weren't pissed at all over having to spend money buying yet another dress over a wedding that they are not going to even be in. Now, the one with the bun, you know who I'm talking about, that high bun sitting right on top of her head, she was loving the camera. My Christmas wish this year is to have just an ounce of her confidence, because I would have been hiding behind that fire pit trying to find my light, because daylight and makeup on camera, that's a tough look to pull off. That's housewives level makeup artistry that you need. And they're sitting on chairs with no table in order to camouflage any of their fat rolls when they're sitting down. I think that's a really tough thing to pull off. Ask any of the women on The View. I think it's a misconception that people think Whoopi's seat over on the left is the best seat. No. Joy knows better. You go in the very back. That table covers you. You could be wearing pajama pants. No one's going to know any different. Okay, I digress. Sorry, I was watching The View at the gym this morning, along with Wendy Williams, whose body is, it leaves a lot of questions to be answered. I don't know what is going on. She's got ginormous boobs, and then this tiny little body. Is that Sphinx? Is that plastic surgery? Someone let me know. I'm not a Wendy Williams watcher. Ooh, I'm not a trip dub, but something's up with that. So let me know. Anyway, back to Ashley and Jay. Oh yes, so they decide to elope, jump to elopement day. They're packing for it. They're feeling better about canceling the wedding. I would be too. I actually kind of think eloping is romantic. If I had to do it all over again, I think I would just elope. There's something sort of magical about it. Okay, back to where we were. All of a sudden, bang, 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 ding, dong, ding, dong, ding, dong. What the fuck is going on? I thought someone was going to throw, what do they call those bomb things that explode? You know what I'm talking about, through the windows. There's a word for it. What is it? Where it explodes glass and stuff like that. Am I making this up? I think it was like a World War II thing. But anyway, I thought someone was going to throw a brick, a bomb, something through the window. I don't know how Ashley just got up and went straight towards the door. When the doorbell at my house even just rings, or I hear just a gentle tap, 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 I hit the deck. We, as a family, go into lockdown mode. Even, I'm talking about Amazon Prime, even if I know it's the guy coming up to the door to drop off, you know, my monthly supply of probiotics, because I'm all about health and fitness, you guys. I still will not answer the door. You just don't do it. So Ashley's got balls of steel. goes to the front door, and in one motion swings it open and just goes, "What?" And then we just barely see that it's friend Natalie, the one that I was going to say we, but I will take ownership. I used to like her, but then we learned that she's a monster and now I can't stand her. And you hear Natalie saying, "We need to talk." Whew. I'm anxious to see what some of you think about the news that came out over the weekend. I love how I'm saying it. Oh, the news, as if it's, you know, coming from CNN or something. There were photos of Ashley and Jay, and it clearly looks like a wedding. She's in the big traditional wedding dress. He's in a white tux. Bridesmaids, groomsmen, family. Looks like it's in Jamaica. I don't know if this was before or after they eloped, but if it was before, ooh, what is going on? I don't like this keeping secrets from us stuff. Now let's talk about Colt and Larissa. I'm building myself up to get to Stephen and Olga and Eric and Lita. I'm going to lose my shit. I'm going to have to brew another cup of coffee to wet my whistle for those two assholes. But for now, let's get into Colt and Larissa. 30 days out from the wedding, and Larissa is still so happy to be proposed to Colty. I happy to prepare for things for wedding, except Colty need to leave his mother because I don't like live with Debbie. It better have been production's idea for Debbie to tag along with Larissa to go wedding dress shopping, because if Colt really did want the two of them to go together to bond, that is so mean. No one should ever have put Debbie in that situation. No one wants to go wedding dress shopping less than Debbie wants to go. She'd much rather be belly up to the nickel slots than be anywhere near Larissa slotting herself into a dress that's being paid for out of her own checking account. I would love to know what the real story behind this wedding dress shopping, this budget is, because I cannot see Colt promising Larissa that she could buy any dress she wanted. Larissa claims that he said that she could, but now Colty lie a little bit and now he a pain in my ass. The only way I can see that conversation actually happening would have been if Colt were getting a while he promised that, because I think he wears his wallet, you know, with like one of those little RFID cards in it, even when he's having sex. Maybe even not the wallet, like the kind that my mom wears when she travels, where it's flesh colored. It's like a little thing, a little necklace you wear around your neck. Can't you see it? He's got a little wallet, and in the wallet, probably photos that he got taken at JCPenney of his little kitties. All right, Jody, back to life, back to reality. Oh my God, remember that song? Who sang that? Was that In Vogue? Oh, I gotta look that up. Maybe Leah will know. Oh, see what I did there. Enter Leah. Remember, this is Cousin John's wife. I didn't recognize her when she was down the block because she wasn't wearing her Ann Getty's headband. Instead, she was wearing a Real Housewives of Orange County sky top. Yeah, remember those? Must have just made its way westward into the Las Vegas fashion scene. Now, Leah really should consult with Larissa because, you know, Larissa's got a firm grasp on fashion these days. She likes things that are traditional, covered up, especially in bridal, right? Not too deepy, but cropped, you know. It's not like Colt's taste. He likes lots of cleavage. Lottie skin to show. I say, Colty, wedding dress is supposed to be classic-y, pure-y, not like a slut. You know, like Glasses McGee over at Restaurant Carrot Cake. Fucking idiot. She's in this bridal shop, contradicting herself left and right. She comes out in the first dress. I thought it was pretty. I thought it was too pure-y for Larissa. And also, knowing nothing about wedding dresses, I know shit, okay? I just know that they're expensive. I can tell you right now, there's no way in hell that dress is anywhere even near $1,000. Double it, triple it at least. We all know it's not in Larissa's budget, and man, when they put that rhinestone, I was gonna say necklace, oh God, can you even imagine? When they put the belt around Larissa, Debbie's eyes got even larger. You could see the dollar signs. She is adding up all these additional charges. She's about to lose her goddamn mind. Thank God Leah was there just to calm it down. Leah really does have a calming presence about her. That's probably why my boyfriend John fell in love with her. Now, according to Larissa, this dress is not going to do because, you see, Colt is a real freak. He wants to see her in some super sexy, nasty wedding dress. Awesome. Thanks, Larissa. That's just what every mother-in-law wants to hear their future daughter-in-law say. Now, off she goes to put on another dress, and then, sexy song, please. She comes out in, again, I know nothing about wedding dresses, but I think it's the same dress. It basically looked like the exact same thing as the first one. Not a huge difference. Probably, maybe it was more, maybe it was less, but still, it's $2,400. Larissa thinks Colty is just going to bend over backwards and say yes. Debbie finally is seeing red. For the first time, she should have been seeing it without AC in her car for the past 10 years. But finally, she starts singing the Ace of Base. She sees the sign. She tells Larissa, you know what? It's either the dress or the green card. Dun, dun, dun. And then the mumbling and stammering Larissa was going through, it was incredible. I loved it. She didn't think Debbie had it in her to call her on her shit, let alone call her on her shit in public, in the bridal shop. Go, Debbie. Now, it turns out Debbie was right because Colt tells us in his little confessional moment that he thinks the cost of the dress was ridiculous. He thinks the cheaper, the better. Sounds like he almost wanted to lower the budget even less than $1,000. He's so pissed. Now, today they're having a barbecue in order to... Oh, I'm laughing because it's so stupid. Colt thought having a barbecue would help them start fresh and try to make everyone happy, forget about the little squabble at the dress shop. Such a guy thing, right? Colt, such a man. Hopefully you're catching the sarcasm. Now, Debbie is mashing some meat together with her hands in the kitchen. I'll leave that there because I love Debbie, but I would not be eating those burgers. And Colt and his boobs are manning the grill outside. Now, if you recall, the last time Larissa got together with Colt's family, meaning John and Leah, it didn't go well. I actually thought it went pretty well, but Larissa didn't. She thought that John was mean to her. Don't you just want to know more about Larissa's backstory besides the kids that she plays for adoption? Her childhood, I'm talking. How do you get to the point where you have someone who is so delusional and full of themselves? I just really want to know the upbringing part because I think that would help us all put things into perspective. But let's just get to it. So John and Leah arrive with their kids, already knowing that there was going to be a blowout. I was very uncomfortable because no kid should have to see that kind of shit. That's already making me think of Leah later, but we'll get there. So Debbie goes inside with all the food and the kids, and John's asking how things are going between Colt and Larissa. Now Larissa says, oh, it's been going good. They've been looking for a house because living with Debbie, you know, that bitch is a real chore. Well, this is where John, his shoulders are starting to get tense and tight. He's rolling them back. He says, well, maybe Aunt Debbie can come live with him because he finds her delightful and, you know, then she'd be paying half of his rent. No, 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 no. Larissa is not having it. She sees what John's getting at. She doesn't like it. She doesn't like that Debbie likes things her way. And although Larissa likes it her way, she doesn't see the, you know, hypocrisy of that. Again, the potty kettle blackie thing. Now, at this point, Leah jumps in to point out that, you know, it's a give and take. You're living in the same house and it is Debbie's house too. She was living here before. She's paying rent. You got to do what you got to do. However, Larissa calls it hell. Debbie is making Larissa's life hell. Well, that does it. John is fired up and I was turned on. He laid into Larissa, equally something into me. He yells at her that she doesn't do anything. She doesn't work. She's using Colt for his money and she's taking advantage of him. Now, this is a weird little cutaway because Larissa starts saying something like, well, do you see Colt's body? That's the only thing I take advantage of. I thought it was weird. Maybe I'm not interpreting it correctly, but doesn't that imply that she thinks his body is the only good thing of use to be taking advantage of? See what I'm saying? Maybe I'm just thinking far too deep into it. That's what she said. No, whatever. They keep fighting. I'm drooling over John at this point. Colt is in shock, and I think he was actually loving that someone was saying everything that he wants to say probably his insecurities are telling him, but he feels like he can't say it to Larissa. A few weeks ago, I told you about Green Chef, a USDA-certified organic company whose meal plans include paleo, vegan, vegetarian, keto, gluten-free, omnivore, and my favorite, carnivore, which all include a wide variety of organic ingredients. Since then, I personally subscribed myself using my own promo code, I ain't too proud, for a sweet discount, and I really, really love it. My kids are still young, so I subscribe for boxes containing 3 meals for 2 people. That is plenty for Dave and I to have our own plate and the kids to have a portion of ours. Now, because Dave travels quite a bit, I go on to Green Chef and choose which weeks I want to skip and which meals I want to try. Green Chef does all the shopping, chopping, and makes the sauces for me so I can easily plan healthier, high-quality dinners for my family. The recipes are quick, easy, and come with step-by-step instructions with pictures, which I love, and it helps if you're cooking with kids or just starting out. Last night, I made Spanish steak with patatas bravas, and the slaw with currants was my favorite part. The variety of cuisines is my husband's favorite thing about Green Chef because he was getting tired of my crockpot surprises and endless pasta bowls for the kids. For example, tonight we're trying spiced shrimp with coconut rice, and that is a flavor we'd normally only eat at a restaurant, so it makes dinner not only delicious, but a cost-efficient way to try out new flavors. For $50 off your first box of Green Chef, go to greenchef.us/realityTV. That brings your first box of 3 meals to less than $30. That's greenchef.us/realityTV for $50 off your first box. greenchef.us/realityTV. Now, something I feel like I have to say, even though I really do love John, it was pretty shitty of him to just attack Colt's fiance in her own home. It's Debbie and it's Colt's home, but it's her home too. Colt, if he were my fiance, ooh, shivers up my spine. I would expect him to stick up for me. He should have at least tried to stick up for Larissa. Again, I don't like her. I do think she's using him. But if we're just looking at a partnership, partners should stick up for each other. And that was pretty shitty. Now, again, I personally enjoyed everything that John was saying to Larissa. But was it shitty for him to just go after her and attack her? I suppose. However, let's get back to regularly scheduled programming. So he's just yelling at Larissa, all the things we saw. In case you didn't see it, he's calling her delusional. There's no chance in hell that she's going to have this Jaguar that she thinks she's going to have. Oh, that was funny. I mean, unless she's at the zoo and Debbie elbows her into the Jaguar exhibit, that's not going to happen, honey. So yeah, their love is fake. Colt thinks it's real, but we all know that's not what love looks like. Now Larissa starts screaming, don't come to my wedding. Everyone who's against the queen will die. Don't come to my wedding. Larissa, just for the record, no one wants to come to your carrot cakeless wedding anyway. So John and Leah get the hell out of there. They are done with her. And now, since Larissa doesn't have John to yell at, she turns her sights on Debbie. Now Debbie is totally Jody in this scene. She's finding shit to do around the kitchen. She's eavesdropping like every normal person I know. And all of a sudden, Larissa hears a door close and freaks the fuck out again. She's yelling at Debbie how she should and shouldn't close doors. You know what? Debbie paid for the door so she can do whatever the fuck she likes to it. She can rip it off the hinges and install AC in the closet just for shits and giggles if she wants to. But Larissa is on a roll, so now Debbie is out of there. She pulls a Shannon Bedore and she is done. She's going upstairs. She does not want to be disturbed until after David Venable does his Mrs. Printable's Apples presentation on QVC. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, Google it. You'll thank me later. Where is Colty? Where is Colty? Here I am, sitting on the fucking couch. He's the calm in the storm, not saying a word. I kind of feel bad for him in this moment, but you know what? Stand up and stick up for your mom. I felt bad for Debbie that no one was standing up. Well, I guess John did, but Colt didn't. Colt should have said something in that moment to tell Larissa to shut the fuck up, yelling at his mom like that. Now, Colt thinks everyone's just overreacting, although he does go into Larissa. He lays into her that she's overreacting. She thinks everyone's attacking her when they are not. Now, we kind of are because she sucks, but at this point, this is where she takes off her engagement ring, throws it at Colt, and says she can have it back, and she's a victim of Debbie's. Now, I'm going to go a little off script here. I'm going to speak from experience. I know of only 3 people who have experienced a fiancé throwing their engagement ring back at them. And I'll tell you from this extensive study of 3 couples that each of those couples ended up going through the nastiest divorces that I've ever seen or even read about. I think if someone did a study on this, look at couples who marry even after they have this kind of interaction with each other. And I'm telling you, there's something to the type of person who can do that, even in the most heated of situations, to take off a ring that someone has given you as a token for your love and promise to spend forever with each other and to throw it across the room like that. I'm skeptical. If you're one of those people who had that, I'm sorry. I don't want to group you into that. I'm just saying, again, based on my extensive research of 6 people. Now let's go on to Jonathan and Fernanda. With 37 days to wed, it's snowing. Fernanda hasn't seen the snow, so she's admiring the snowflakes and, oh, it's so cute and romantic. Yeah, until you're freezing your ass off in the snow, you're shoveling it until you're sweating your ass off, there's steam coming off your back. Yeah, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? Snowy climate people. Oh, so romantic to see your significant other steaming outside. But let's talk about their wedding planning. Now, John is stressed out about, everything, the flowers, this and that. A bit of a groomzilla, I would assume. But Fernanda knows what's up. And by what's up, I mean good TV. She's got to bring it. They can't just keep talking about their age difference and her missing her family. It's got to go on to John now. She starts telling John that he needs to talk to his mom more. Now, I agree. Family is important, and John should be calling his mom like Fernanda says. She says every week and that John needs to ask his mom what he needs, what he can do for her. To that, I just want to say, be careful what you wish for, Fernanda. I like what she's saying in theory. It's very sweet. Yes, families should be close. They should keep in contact with each other. But I also think Fernanda is being incredibly idealistic about this. To a certain extent, I think John is right. You know, I'm not a big fan of his because I think he's kind of douchey. But for men and their moms especially, I think after college and after men are out on their own, they don't really need the daily or even weekly interactions that a lot of women have with their moms, if they're lucky to still have their moms here on this earth. It's very sweet of Fernanda to want to be a really big, happy family, though. I hope whatever issues John has with his mom, there must be something that we have not seen for him to get so emotional about it. I hope it all works out in the end. Okay, let's talk about Kalani and Asuelu. They got some family issues, too. So Kalani's sister, God, that's a tongue twister, she's packing up to leave Utah. Kalani is sad to see her go. I think it's probably more of a nervousness about having to talk to Asuelu without her sister around, spending time alone with them. Because you see, Kalani now has to sit down with Asuelu in front of cameras and tell him she doesn't want to marry him anymore. Ouch. Now, as soon as Kalani started talking, they're sitting on the couch together with the baby, I knew Asuelu was going to start crying. I just knew it. I started feeling that lump in my throat, and I started crying at the same rate and tempo as Asuelu. I don't know what it is, just his little face, his little boyish features. The guy just wants to be loved. I don't think he's a bad person. I just don't think he has the EQ. Jury's still out on the IQ. But he doesn't have the emotional ability to know that he really does want a mother figure in a partner, but on the same hand, he doesn't want to be mothered. If that makes any sort of sense. I'm really getting to some psychobabble here. Now, while Kalani is moved by Asuelu's tears, she feels like she is falling in love with him more. She understands him more, and he understands her after this conversation. It made me less confident that their togetherness, Samoan coconut time? What? Okay, their intimacy time doesn't end with tears. Can you just see it? Hold me. But Asuelu's cute, okay, for a son. I could not be with him in that way, but if he were my son, I would probably want to bounce him on my knee, even as a 30-year-old. You know, all the things that I make fun of other people for. Okay, now I'm going to have a sip of my coffee here because I'm probably going to lose my voice and my goddamn mind talking about Eric and Lita. We're still 58 days out from the wedding, and they're still outside that upscale Scandinavian furniture store that they had no business being in. And Eric's in the car telling Lita, "I'm not rich. I told you we'd pick and choose bills sometimes." Okay, I wonder if this was before or after Eric and Lita got married back in Indonesia. Yeah, this is probably old news by now, but just in case you didn't know, it was outed sometime earlier this week, last week, that these two assholes actually did have a wedding ceremony back in Jakarta, Indonesia, months before this show started taping or airing. Now, this new fact, or somewhat new fact, makes me hate Eric even more because he knew exactly how Lita was going to treat his daughters. There is no way that Lita just sprung this new hatred on Eric and Tasha and the rest of his daughters after seeing the apartment. No fucking way. Oh God, I'm going to want to jump there ASAP, but let's go through the motions. Lita's in the car. She's still pouting about the $4,000 couch, which leads to her saying she loves Eric, but she was really looking forward to pursuing her medical career. Well, you know what, Lita? Good luck pursuing that with your $0 salary plus benefits, babe, and a track record on national TV for all future medical practices and hospitals to see. At this point, Alessandro is probably more likely to get a fellowship than this fucking moron. Now then, Lita drops the phrase, "your new family," like you're going to have a new family, but you still owe some other person money. My core body temperature was risen. Maybe that was probably a good thing because I was burning some calories, but I was livid already. I hadn't even seen what was to come. Now, he's not just going to dump his daughters, you fucking... They're not his old family. He still currently has them. Just like you, Lita, have Alessandro, you selfish, narcissistic bitch. Now, somewhere in this tirade of Lita's, where she's picking something in her eyeball like no normal human does. No, there's no light behind your eyes, Lita. Stop looking for it. Eric comes to his senses and listens to what Lita is saying, that she would rather have $1,000 a month and Eric give up his parental rights so she can just have a couple extra bucks in her pocket. Eric was right in that moment. That is cruel. It's unfathomable. I think he said something like it's inhuman or inhumane, whatever. No one in the world would demand that from someone that they love. In that moment, I was really proud of Eric. Like, yeah, you tell her, Eric, but you know, they're still together, so we can see how seriously he took her very honest threat. Jump to the next day, the two of them are so sad because they slept in separate rooms last night, separate wings of the 10 by 12 apartment, if you will. So they decide they're going to take a walk. They walk down to the same park where Catfish always films their best of the best. And Lita just continues the ugliness. She doesn't think Eric's daughters deserve child support. She's saying this even though TLC was tweeting, get ready for this one, that Alessandro's dad was paying her child support, providing for her and their son while she was living in Japan. Shocking that she didn't turn it down, right? Because men shouldn't have to pay for it. Yeah, you hate her even more now. So now as soon as Eric starts talking about getting a house and they're asking each other if they understand where the other's coming from, Lita slips in a quick little, "well, then you have to promise that you don't think I'm here for the green card." There it is. She's just feeling him out to see if he's on to her yet. She needs to know if Eric has smartened up or if she still has him exactly where she wants him. Turns out she has him exactly where she wants him. He's such a willing idiot. So now her next goal, after trying to deprive Eric's other two daughters of support and love and, you know, all the things that a father should give their kids, her eyes are on kicking Tasha out of the apartment. Jenica's all cool though, you know, because Eric's daughter Jenica is an asset to Lita. Jenica's old enough to watch Alessandro while Lita takes time to do whatever it is that Lita does, cosplay from what I hear. Need I say more? Now, the only thing left to do is kick Tasha out, and then Lita can just check all the boxes and the DSM-5 diagnosis for narcissistic. Throw an abusive partner in there. Lita is a medical professional and all. She should know this. Let's go down the list. Isolate loved ones, control all communication or lack thereof, etc., etc. All the proper things, if you will. Now, while the video game and Jenica are raising Alessandro, I'm sorry, Lita does provide him water. Lita pretends to read until Tasha comes home. Now is her time to dial up the monster and launch in. She's doing this in front of Jenica and her own son, which has become abundantly clear she doesn't care much about. Tasha isn't even, 15 steps in the door when Lita starts saying she went to her room, she doesn't like the mess. And you guys know me, okay? I am a fucking neat freak. I will fess up to it. I'm probably the biggest asshole to live with. But it's Tasha's room. Her name is on the lease. You're not even on the lease. It's none of your fucking business. You don't live in the room. So if you don't like it, don't look. Listen, I wasn't even Tasha's biggest fan. I thought she was kind of a snooze on 90 Day Live. But God, now I freaking love her. When she looked at Lita without even flinching and said, make me. I got all the chills. I was starting to do like a fist in the air, like I was about to go to some women's march. That a girl, Tasha. The fact that Lita is putting Eric's daughter in a position to defend herself against anyone, let alone Lita, and know that her dad wants her to move out. Is this making sense? I took notes. I couldn't even write the main things because I was so fired up and pissed off. Lita is just cruel. It's fucked up. This is Sybil type shit. Lita is capable of being dangerous. I am telling you, I don't even think that's an exaggeration. I don't even trust her with watching Jenica or even her own son. Even just the presence of her in a room with nothing else going on with anyone under the age of 40, I don't trust it. It's the intentional emotional pain that she is inflicting on someone's daughter. It made me so uncomfortable to watch. Now let's talk about Lita wanting to get a job as a doctor. What's that oath again? Yeah, above all others, do no harm. Fuck off, Lita. And also, fuck off to Eric for throwing your daughter under the bus over the phone. You're not even there in person. That is some life-altering shit right there. For a daughter to have her dad, a dad who she chose to live with, she signed a lease with, she was having a life with you, for you to just so easily toss your daughter to the side with a, and this is a quote, this is one of the few things that I wrote down in my blind rage, just get your shit and get out. Shame on you, Eric. We're all coming down on Lita, and I really hope that Eric is getting the same rage and anger from everyone else that's getting on Lita. Look at me. I'm stammering because I'm shaking right now. I have watched a lot of reality, clearly, but this was real. This is reality. This is a young woman in pain. It's one of those scenes that I think is going to stick with everyone because it was just so dark. And between Jenica and Alessandro just sitting there while all this chaos is surrounding them, relationships being forever altered, and they're just sitting there in silence, probably frozen in fear, not knowing what to do. That to me, of course, in addition to what Tasha was forced to endure, those two kids sitting there with no one talking to them, no one explaining anything, no one getting them out of the room, absolutely heartbreaking. Okay, telling you, I have to calm myself down because Steven is going to send me to the same dark place. I'm really going to need some love after lockup after this. So Steven and Olga, I really could do without the constant flashbacks of Steven berating and being condescending and abusive to Olga, because it really takes a toll on me and I'm sure most of you, especially this week. It was a lot. So in this week's episode, Steven has to follow through with the embassy, Olga's K-1, the baby's passport, all that kind of stuff. So he's meeting with a lawyer first to get all the questions answered. Probably a good idea. I didn't think that Steven would be that smart to even think of it. So we meet Michael, the lawyer, who gives zero Russian fucks about Steven and Steven's ivory cashmere scarf. Interesting choice. So Michael, the lawyer, prints off a form that Steven really could have printed off himself because, you know what? I checked. It was just that easy. You know, I always do my research. He could have saved himself a few Russian, a Russian nickel, whatever it is. Now, on to Olga's visa. There is an issue there. It's not good news. Russia and the U.S., you know, we're not on spectacular terms. So the embassy is not willing to approve any K-1 visas, or at least there's no sense of urgency with it. We knew it was coming. We all knew he was going to say it. It was just a matter of time. Steven wonders if he can just take the newborn baby, who, you know, is still exclusively breastfed and only weeks old, away from his mother to live in the U.S. with just him. I can't. Not jaw clenched. Don't make my jaws turn into Bethany Frankel's. God damn it. So let's jump to Moscow. I'm going to bite my liberal tongue here. Olga and Steven are there to make arrangements for Richie's U.S. citizenship papers and also to meet with Olga's best friend, Anna. Thank God. If there's any time in Olga's life that she needs a friend, now is the time. Olga lights up, runs to her friend, like I imagine Olga running towards me when I inevitably take her in. I love Anna. I think she's a good friend. She was super brave to ask Steven those questions on camera. She's pretty direct, and I think Steven's answers were actually pretty telling about his narcissism. Did you notice that when Anna asked him, "Are you here for the baby or are you here for Olga?" he said, "I don't know. Honestly, I don't know." Well, let's just recall 7-8 days ago when Steven was just yelling at Olga. Remember, they were in the apartment. He just got back from, I don't know, throwing the car seat around the street. He was saying that Olga was not paying enough attention to him and all she cares about is the baby. And then that was paired with the, "I might take the baby back without Olga" comment. So to me, it seems like Steven has no problem with himself caring about the baby more than he cares about Olga, but fuck no if it's the other way around. Steven must be number one priority, just like Lita, right? I mean, maybe we should just pair up those two monsters, Steven and Lita. That would be a show. That would be a show I would definitely watch because they would both deserve each other. Okay, next week on 90 Day Fiancé, little previews tell us that Colt tells Larissa he can't marry her as she demands compliments from him. That's like the complete opposite of me. If someone's like, "Hey, I like your shirt," I'm like, "Oh no, it's ugly. It's stained. I got it for $2. Then Lita talks with Eric's ex-wife. Wow. Kalani appears to want to cancel the wedding again. Poor sweet Lou. Steven thinks he can breastfeed, apparently. Ashley tells Natalie to fuck off. Yes. And Fernanda has her own Shannon Bedore walk-off moment. Now, if you are into 90 Day Fiancé, on this week's Patreon, I have my buddy Amanda on. She was a foreign bride. She is Canadian. She shares with me about how she went about the visa process, the green card process. Very different than what I thought it was. So join me on Patreon if you are interested in that. After a quick break, let's get into some love after lockup. It really is the most wonderful time of the year. Also, the time I realize I need clothes with a little extra stretch to them. Now, the budget is tight in the Huff household right now with the holidays and home improvement, but I'm not even worried about getting myself some new stretchy jeans because I shop on Poshmark. Yes, I'm not only a podcaster, I'm also a client. Now, I went on the free Poshmark app the other day, searched for the brands of jeans I love, cut from the cloths, and believe it or not, I really like American Eagle jeans too. The great thing about Poshmark is that you're shopping from millions of closets from across America, so you can find exactly what you want. I found a pair of jeans I loved, new with tags, but instead of just purchasing the price listed, I offered the seller $40, and guess what? She accepted. It's that easy. $90 jeans for $40, and shipping is so easy on both ends that I received them by the end of the week. It's actually so easy, I forgot that I had a really nice watch I received as a gift. I've never opened it, so guess what I will be selling soon. You know, don't tell Dave. I'm just going to keep the proceeds, keep shopping, and next time it looks like some new running shoes will make their way to my cart. Listeners of RealiTV get $5 off your first purchase by entering referral code RealiTV. Maybe you want to find something cute for the holidays, New Year's Eve, or maybe even some cozy pajamas. Come on, you know you're tempted. Just do it. Go to Poshmark.com or the Poshmark app and remember to use referral code RealiTV, R-E-A-L-I-T-V. Poshmark.com, the easiest way to buy and sell fashion. Well, now we can have some fun. Love After Lockup Season 2. Thank you, Sharp Entertainment. Killing it with the 90 Day Fiancé and Love After Lockup. They are moving places fast. Let's start out with a new couple, Matt and Caitlin. First, let's catch up, see what Caitlin's deal is. She's packing up a room and her friend asks her, panties or no panties? Any of you and your friends talk like that? Yeah, mine, we don't. I have very close friends for 20 plus years. None of us share our underwear habits, nothing on this level. And we don't say panties either, ever. Can we all agree it's just underwear? Let's go with underwear from now on. Now we learn Caitlin has been seeing Matt for 5 years. All of that time, he's been in prison. We also learn that Caitlin has zero of my insecurities because she just whips off her shirt in front of the crew and shows off her padded pink bra. Oh, what girls with little boobs can get away with. I am only imagining that bra has like one clasp in the back. I look at her bras like I look at the one percenters. Oh, girl can dream. But back to Caitlin and her love for Matt. He's in prison for possession and eluding with a firearm. I'm saying that with several question marks at the end because that is exactly how Caitlin said it. Very reassuring. Now, I don't know why she keeps changing into different Walmart cotton dresses in front of her friend, but she just can't stop. She is ripping her clothes off left and right in front of her friend who's name, I think, is Jordan, as if Jordan isn't in her personal hell helping this chick pack, all because she has to move out of her mom's house because she's about to take in and release prisoner. Now Jordan has to see her friend just rubbing it in that she's thinner. You know you thought it too. Now immediately I have concerns about Caitlin, not only because she peruses Craigslist for prison pen pals, but because she's talking like a teenager about her mom not approving of her living with Matt. In case you didn't catch it, Caitlin is 32. She's not Macy from Teen Mom, although there is a very eerily similar thing going on. There are a lot of family issues that we're going to have to be forced to unpack here. See what I did there? Packing joke. But here is the Cliff Notes version. And for you millennials, that's a thing that we used to use before Google if we didn't read a book. Matt doesn't want to live with his mom after he gets released, but Caitlin already made arrangements with her to live with Matt in his mother's home because Mother Caitlin won't let Caitlin and Matt live with her. God, Mom, why are you always trying to ruin my life? Fast forward to 32-year-old Caitlin rolling up to Matt's mom's house. The mom, Caitlin, says she never had. Yeah, this is not going to end well. I did not like that Caitlin swore within the first 15 seconds of meeting Mother Matt. Clearly, I'm not a fan of Caitlin's, but this just really put me over the edge. She screams something like, "Holy shit, I can't believe I'm meeting you." I get that, you know, if your son is in prison, your girlfriend moving into your house, you probably are not the most uptight, but Mother Matt looks like a normal mom, and normal moms do not want their kids' friends or their kids' significant others post-prison coming up to the door screaming like that. I mean, you got to make a better first impression. Now remember, Matt doesn't know that Caitlin is even talking to his mom, let alone moving in and making plans for them to all live together. Now, thank God, the moment Mother Matt started speaking, I knew she was not as stupid as Caitlin. Father, son, Holy Ghost, there's someone who has some redeeming character. From the sounds of it, Mother Matt knows what's up. She doesn't even trust her son that much after what he has put her through. We learn this is Matt's third time in and out of prison, and she knows it's not all romance and flirting and all the shit that Caitlin is convinced that it's going to be. Ring, ring, ring. Guess who? It's Matt. Well, Caitlin's got a surprise for him. I'm here with your mom. What? I don't like this. Okay. Mother Matt quickly sees her way out to go feed the ants or some shit outside. She's not an idiot. She's already over whatever these two are about to put her through. Oh, poor Mother Matt. Caitlin, should we feel bad for her too because she's not going to get her good night call? Boo hoo. Now Matt is starting to show this irrational temper he has, how controlling he is, all because of your fucking detour to my mom's house. Ah, these two are going to bring us so much joy. Now let's meet up with Lizzie and Scott. Have we missed them or what? And Scott's son, it looks like he's changed. Oh wait, hold on. That's not Scott's son. It's Tarny from Sister Wives. Hardly noticed him because it looks like he showered. Yeah, okay. For real, this realtor looks like he snuck in after career day. He's really just a fifth grader trying his go at it. Now, Scott is looking at houses that he has no business being in. The decor, I would say, is right up Scott's alley because, you know, that's probably where Scott has been spending a lot of his time since he dropped $90,000 on Lizzie over the last few years. But poor, let's just call him Tony, the realtor, he's having to listen to Scott talk about his first night sleeping with Lizzie. Moment of silence on that waterbed, for that waterbed. That moment of silence was for the waterbed, the last one existing on the face of the earth. That's where Scott wants to spend his first night alone with Lizzie. Scott just loves telling everyone about Lizzie, doesn't he? He really thinks that she is some sort of prize. I actually get why he thinks that she's clever, but not for the same reasons. Not because she can somehow shake off charges or shake him down for 90K. She can hide drugs in prison and phones and all that kind of stuff. I think she's pretty clever because did you see those bikinis and lingerie that she fashioned while in prison? Consider Lizzie the Cinderella of prison, because she made some rags and washcloths, even some strips of torn up linens, into the hottest looks of the summer 2016 prison yard collection. Oh, hold on. Speaking of the princess, ring, ring, ring. Funny how that happens during this show, huh? All right, well, Lizzie calls. Now, this is the best part of House Hunters, is my favorite part, right? Where he wants a 3-bedroom, 2-bath with a view and a close proximity to the river. She wants a fireplace, pool, and a 4th bedroom, because I don't want to have sex with you. Oh, okay, well, that changes Tony's dreams of a higher commission, so he's just going to duck the hell out of there, just like me after I eat at Chili's. Am I the only one? I feel like Larry. Like my little tum-tum gets upset after I eat at Chili's every time. Okay, moving on. Anyone else notice something that I think is very important? Scott is doing all of his confessionals in that same house. I recognize that leather chair that was in the corner of the family room. It was the same one Scott was sitting in. And then if you look even closer, as a Jody always does, you see that he's in that forest green painted family room in all of his little confessional videos. So is that a spoiler that he gets the house? Or is that sort of a slip up by production that they probably rented that house to maybe stage the house hunting? And this is really their production headquarters? Let's look into it. Let me know what you think. But back to Saint Lizzie of the Slammer. She's a godly woman now, and she just cannot have sex with Scott if she's sober. Same. Now, Scott's all cool with this because, you know, he's $90,000 poorer and he literally has nothing else to lose. So if he could just find a house with a swimming pool and tack on another bedroom, that'd be great. Bye. And that is what Scott calls a great phone call. Now, he's having a busy day because after the house tour, he's off to meet Lizzie's daughter, Jasmine. I really was not expecting this. I didn't think this day was ever going to come, but here they are. They haven't met in person. They've talked on the phone a few times, but man, I feel bad for this girl. It's sad to me that Jasmine feels like her mom wouldn't be in prison if she hadn't been born. She said that, you know, as if her birth alone set Lizzie off on a bad path just because Lizzie was young and a teen mom. No. Lizzie has done such a number on this girl, even behind bars. Now, Scott thinks that they're meeting to talk about the housing situation in general, but Jasmine has other ideas. She doesn't want to live with Scott herself, and she certainly does not want her mom living with Scott either. She intends to spend alone time together with Lizzie so that they can build the relationship they never had. Her theory goes something like this. If Scott really loved Lizzie and cared about her and the relationship that Lizzie has with Jasmine, then Scott wouldn't expect them to live together. He would just back off and go away. Okay, kind of get that. I kind of see that. But this makes me wonder, what is Lizzie telling Jasmine? I would guess it goes something like this. Scott wants me to live with him, but I really don't want to. Classic, manipulative, pathological liar. Now, as they talk, they get to that little thing called $90,000 that really puts Jasmine over the edge. She had no idea that Scott had given her that much, and she didn't know that Lizzie was doing drugs in prison from at least the first impression that I got from it. But instead of getting pissed off at her mom, or even her mom and Scott, Jasmine just gets fired up at only Scott for enabling her mom to do drugs in prison. Why not be mad at your mom that she wasn't saving that money for you, Jasmine? But instead, Jasmine is idealizing her mom. She thinks this relationship is just going to be fantastic because, you know, she's going to think that because Lizzie has manipulated her and she's lying. And in the end, Jasmine's decided that she's going to break them up. I think she's going to be successful. But I think it's going to be because Lizzie, you know, she's a monster, something along those lines. Okay, let's talk about Megan and Michael. M&Ms would be the perfect wedding favor suggestion, don't you think? Not only because they're Megan and Michael, but also he's in prison in Michigan. MMM, how cute is that? Well, Megan actually is super cute. I love her. She's adorable. So far, I think I want to be her friend. Now, we hadn't gotten a look at Michael just yet. Neither had Megan. We'll get to that. But I started seeing why Megan fell for him because he said on the phone to her, "I miss your fine little ass." Well, sign, sealed, delivered. I'm yours if you say my ass and the word little in the same sentence. I don't really think I have a huge ass. It's just flat. Even though I try to work it out, weights and all that kind of stuff, it just gets flatter. But anyway, Megan and Michael met because her cousin or his cousin, someone's cousin, wanted Michael to have a little pen pal, someone to talk to. So Megan was like, "Oh my God, totally. Please give my phone number to prisoners. It's my personal cell. They can just ring me up day or night. I am in." Well, wouldn't you know it, one thing leads to another. They have an instant connection. We learn that Megan is a virgin. She doesn't elaborate, only I'm bringing this up because we don't know at this point if it's a religious thing or if it's just because she hasn't found a person that she's wanted to sleep with. She just says she hasn't trusted anyone like she trusts Michael. Oh God, that's not good. Enter Donnie. Now he and I have an instant connection. He is our voice of reason. He is the father we all want. He's speaking the truth. He loves his daughter. I'm in love with him. He's loving his daughter. I was going to say in love with his daughter, but that's a whole other show. Now, Dave, my husband, thinks that Donnie looks like someone named Wendell Pierce. Apparently, He was in The Wire, Selma, Horrible Bosses. This is all thanks to IMDb. I didn't see any of those films, any of those shows, because I already have anxiety. I am on the highest dose of Effexor before I need to go for a refill. So anyway, more details Megan has left out that Donnie fills us in on is that they have never met in person. They've only talked over the phone, never face to face. And Michael has a daughter with another woman, neither of whom Megan has met. Nevertheless, Megan is persisting. She is undeterred. She's convinced that she will love this little girl as her own and all's merry and bright. Donnie, poor Donnie, he is sitting there. He repeatedly rubs his face. He's breathing deeply as Megan is just saying that, you know, being incarcerated for beating someone up, violating your parole, it's no big whoop, Pops. What's the big deal? Oh, Donnie, you need a hug. Come here. Bring it in. Come on, Don, Don. It's all right. Okay, now close your eyes, Donnie, because your daughter has found some batshit crazy woman named Kiyomi to teach her writhing, or perhaps it was riding. One of my friends online on Twitter was like, I think you meant riding. Doesn't matter. Writhing, riding. Megan has found this woman to simultaneously writhe onto things like the chairs and the floor. And is this a thing? If it is, I don't want any part of it. This teacher is in lingerie with something strapped up her ass crack around her thighs. It might have been crotchless. I was far too prude to look, but Megan loves it. She is ready to get her freak on. She even goes to a sexy store with her friend B. Now, I love this guy, okay? I want to be his friend. He's just sipping on his straw like I do when people tell me about crazy shit they did while I was doing boring stuff like lesson plans and cleaning and being uptight. But Megan, she's so idealistic. She thinks she's going to rent this nice hotel room. They're going to have sex. It's going to be great. And just around the time that they're about to go to the dildo section, she drops a bomb on her friends. Michael has a daughter named Aviana. She hasn't met Aviana or the former baby mama, but she's going to love her. They're going to be like a little family together. Speaking of, Aviana. Oh, who? Huh? Who is this blonde woman chasing after Aviana? Well, folks, this is Sarah. She is Michael's fiance who has been together with Michael for 6 years. They got engaged before he went to prison, and they cannot wait to be a family together. And Michael and what's her name? Sarah. They just have this level of trust that nothing can come between. Nothing's going to bring them down. Nothing like the fresh delusion that you experience when watching a new season of a show like this. All right, moving on to our last couple, Tracy and Clint. Clint. It's just not a name that rolls off the tongue, is it? And Clint looks rough. He looks like a Clint. He's an only child. His parents stopped at perfection. Okay, well, Clint hasn't gotten his hearing checked ever because I don't think anyone would argue if we said his parents said we didn't use protection, but perfection, I'm going to argue with that one. Now, Clint is wearing a vest and a name tag, but is seated at a table in a very expansive, empty-looking restaurant. Perhaps this is just the symbol for what it looks like inside of Clint's head. I don't know. But before we can give it too much more thought, in walks a woman with the exact same haircut as Clint. We quickly learn that Clint has been married twice, and this woman, who looks like she's, stay with me here on a journey, a 2000-something version of Mama D from Real Housewives of Dallas. She's actually Clint's ex-wife and current boss. Her name is Haley. Oh, here go hell come. We're going to come to love this woman. I know it. Now, through giggles that kind of sounded like Clint was high, don't you think? He says he finished a night audit at the hotel where Haley, the ex, is his boss. I'm just really, really hoping The night audit is not something money related. He's got to be in charge of an audit of, what do you think, like return towels from the pool, something like that, because I would not trust this guy with anything. Now, the thing is, he has to ask his boss, Haley, for extra days off of work because, that's him giggling. He's met someone and he's getting married this Friday. Haley's reaction is priceless. She should just be the face for Love After Lockup. The eyes that went large, the frozen posture, the come again, I thought you said this Friday. You couldn't have said this Friday. And then the sound of air being sucked out of her lungs. As Clint says, we met on prisoninmates.com. It was amazing. Now enter Tracy, or rather, Tracy's convicted cuties profile. We didn't actually get to meet her this episode just yet. Now, Clint said something about snail mail, but I was distracted by his thumb ring. Yeah, you heard me right, the thumb ring, and coloring book pages that were taped to his headboard. At first, I was really grossed out because I thought, oh God, is he mixing pictures that his kids colored for him with photos of Tracy that you know he jerks off to? But then I realized, God, no, Jody, no, no, no. These are coloring pages from Tracy, and that's special. Now, Tracy is also pretty special because she's in federal prison. Oh, yeah. Not state prison, not county jail. Federal. Don't want to rub it in, but it's true. Clint says she, you know, something about passing bad checks or bringing drugs in or out, something, but I don't know. The details are fuzzy for Clint. All he knows is that she's 500 miles away in Houston, and all I know is that Tracy looks better as a blonde, okay, and a free person. Well, Haley knows she's about to lose her crucifix earrings because she's about to Hulk out at any moment when Clint starts saying that they're getting married the day after Tracy's release. And Tracy saved him and rescued him. At this point, Haley twitches, like an actual tick developed in her nervous system, because this woman must have been through the ringer with Clint. She was probably the one who got him his current job if she's the boss, right? And now he's sitting in front of her saying that this chick is the one that saved him and rescued him. Now Haley gathers her last wits about her and asks him if they have any goals. And Clint says, yeah, they do, but probably not the ones that they should have. Okay, cool, Clint. Great. Now, one cool thing I did think Clint had going for him is that he's a soprano. Not many male sopranos out there, but when he hit that high note, I think it'll work out. I really hope that you guys caught that too. He had that way up here where most guys have it down here. It was incredible. Wow. Now jump to Clint walking into Kendall's kitchen, Kendall and kitchen with a K. And Clint's mom, Alice, is working behind the meat, maybe it was a sandwich counter. And she tries to talk Clint out of this insane idea with the offer of a free sandwich. Now, I'm telling you right now, I could be talked out of a marriage with a good carne asada, or even I would take it toasted or untoasted Italian deli sandwich with like the salami, the different meats and cheeses. I'm just saying that Clint has far more willpower than I do because Alice cannot get through to him. However, maybe Father Clint in the back office can. Let's go. Clint marches into his dad's office like a 5-year-old on take your kid to work day, and he faces down Kendall. Oh, yes. The OG Kendall, not the Kardashian kind. He is the King Kendall, if you will, of Kendall's kitchen. No, Kris Jenner, this isn't for sale. Now, I can already tell which way Father Kendall leans politically, but he won me over anyway with a little Z-snap and I already seen too many Dr. Phils to know this isn't a good idea. You know, Kendall didn't just fall off a turnip truck. I know, I've already seen too many Dr. Phils too. And you can tell Clint's dad is just so over Clint. He is pissed his son turned out like this. And what's with Mother Alice over there? She was just on Clint's ass too, and now she's taking sides. She did a little flip-flopper there. She's doing what every codependent helicopter mom does. Meanwhile, you know, as soon as they left the room, Kendall rolled his eyes, breathed through his mouth some more, dialed up his attorney, and drafted up the now third prenup that he's had to do to protect the Kendall's kitchen empire, because he knows that this is not going to end in a happily ever after. No Tony and Angela this week, but previews for this season. I think it's Lizzie, floating in that pool. Oh my God, it looked like a horror movie. We have Caitlin and Matt getting it on. It's horny. It's gross. Lizzie is sucking Scott's soul through his bottom lip at one point. I posted a picture. Gross. It looks like someone's having a threesome. There must be a couple that we haven't met yet. It's going to be insane, and I cannot wait for it. Well, that was another big show today, so thanks for sticking around. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. And remember, if you leave a 5-star review for Reality TV and my buddy Troy at Taste of Reality podcast, leave us a 5-star review, take a screenshot of it, or if you already have, take a screenshot of the review that you made. Email it to me, send it to me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Reality TV Pod. And I'll enter you for the drawing to win an item of your choice from tasteofreality.com store. Really, really funny stuff over there. Love After Lockup, 90 Day Fiancé, Vanderpump, Real Housewives, awesome merchandise. Also, check out Moms on the Rocks podcast, my other podcast. It's not a mommy podcast, I promise you. It's just talking shit, all the other stuff that we do throughout the week. That's Moms on the Rocks, Moms OTR on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And as always, thank you, I love you, and stay salty.